Hello and welcome back to the Audio DT with Rebbe T, the audio Devar Torah, the show where we talk a bit on the Parsha of the week in a mini lecture with some practical lessons to keep. We're looking at Bamidbar, we're talking about Matos Masa, we're looking at chapter 32, chapter Lamed Bet, all about the heart, and we're looking at the first few psukim. The idea of the lave is always that we should talk from the heart and we should do good from the heart, making sure that the actions, the intentions we have are also from the heart, which is interesting here because at the surface, what we're about to talk about when the Reuven, Menashe, and Gad try to ask Moshe to have a special side of the Eiver Yarden, to have the part of the land that wasn't in Israel proper. At surface, it seems like not such a nice request. It seems like they're asking out of selfish reasons, God forbid, they're asking not for the right way. Were they actually asking from the heart? Was the request coming from within? The chapter is Lamed Bet, so let's see what they were asking from the heart and what they were trying to get at. So we're looking here at the first couple of psukim. The Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Menashe, they saw that it was a really nice land. They had a lot of livestock, and they saw the land of Yazer, and they saw it of Gilad, and they felt like it was a nice place. And they came and they asked Moshe and Elazar, asking for these different areas, the land that was belonging to Sichon and Og, like Atarot and Dibon, and all those lands. And they said that they liked it and they wanted, if it was okay, if it pleases you, let this land be given to us as a heritage. Don't take us across the Yarden. But Moshe did not like this, and he responded, "Shall your brethren go to war while you stay here?" A very famous pasuk used a lot. Kind of an idea that we're all responsible for each other, whether it be fighting for each other in taking care of the ideas of Yehadut, and taking care of the ideas of mitzvot and chesed, especially within Israel, where we fight to protect everyone, and we're all supposed to be a part of it, whatever we can do, learning or actual fighting. So Moshe asks, "Shall your brethren go to war while you stay here? Why do you discourage the children of Israel from crossing over to the land which Hashem has given to you?" It seems at surface value that they're asking something, and Moshe is very disappointed. They don't want to go to the actual land. Moshe himself was already told he's not allowed to go to the land because of what happened at the hitting of the rock instead of speaking to it. And he sees here they don't want to go, and he says the key words we're going to focus in on, "Ko asu aval seichem." This is what your fathers did in the times of the spies, and they had a catastrophic result. They didn't want the land. They shrugged the idea, the responsibility of the wonderful gift Hashem was going to give them, and you don't want to go into the land either. But they responded that they were going to actually do it. They're going to actually come with them and fight, and they'll come back just because they felt the land was just more bountiful and more prevalent and more relevant for their kids and for their livestock and the like. And it's also interesting how Moshe responds to them when they ask for the land for their livestock and then their children. Moshe responds later that really it's for you settle your children and your wives, and then we can worry about your livestock, shifting the priorities, making them understand that their priorities are a little bit switched and have to be in the right order. But we look at Chabad, and there's an interesting point we could see from this part of the Parsha. We go to Chabad.org, and we see, with the help of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, an interesting tidbit we could look at together. So basically, Moshe initially saw their request as the equivalent of the Meraglim, the spy shunning of the Eretz Yisrael. But why did he at the end agree to their proposal if he was so upset with them? Why did he even expand on it, adding half the tribe of Menashe to the tribes of Reuven and Gad? The fact that they pledged to participate in other tribes' conquest of the land answered only the first part of Moshe's complaint to them. "Shall your brethren go to war and you sit here?" But not the other, seemingly more grave accusation. Namely, they're repeating the sin of the spies, God forbid, and spurning the land, God forbid, which had caused an entire generation to die in the desert. The explanation is to be found in the first words of the response given by Reuven and Gad to Moshe. "We will build sheepfolds here for our sheep and cities for our young." Hasidic teaching explains the sin of the spies as resulting from a reluctance to assume the mission of settling the land, though they knew that the very purpose of creation is to make for Hashem a dwelling in the lowly world. We've mentioned before, bringing Hashem into our lives, into ourselves, into our souls, and our very aspects of our being. We take the mundane and we elevate it to the spiritual. We've also mentioned many times, here they believe themselves incapable of carrying it out this mission. It is a land that consumes its settlers, is what the spies cried out upon their return from the survey of the land. How could they be sure that once they involved themselves with the land, they would not be overwhelmed by its corporeality? How could they know whether they would indeed exploit its lofty potential, not instead sink into the morass of material life? When the people of Reuven and Gad came forward with their request, Moshe thought he was again meeting with a refusal by a group of spiritualists, quote-unquote, shunning the divinely ordained mission to develop the land. In truth, however, it was not the dread of the material that motivated these two tribes to remain east of the Yarden. On the contrary, Aver Yarden, they wanted to settle these lands, to build cities and ranches, to raise their sheep and cattle on its pastures. Their plea was, do not take us across the Jordan. Did not express reluctance to seek out the potential for holiness contained in the land, but an attraction to even more remote and thus even loftier sparks of godliness. After all, the land west of the Yarden, though material, was the holy land, a land where even the most mundane pursuits are touched with a spiritual glow. Outside of the holy land, outside of Eretz Yisrael proper, the physical world is more lowly and thus contains sparks of divinity that are derived from an even higher source. The tribes of Reuven and Gad were convinced that their mission in life was to pursue, extract, and elevate the sparks, quote-unquote, inherent in the more spiritually distant corner of creation. When they say to Moshe, we will build sheepfolds here for our cattle and cities for our children, Moshe understood that what they were seeking was not an escape from the land, but the opportunity to make a home for Hashem in an even lowlier domain, in the territories that lie beyond the borders of the most sacred of lands, as defined by Israel's present mandate from Hashem. Again, this comes from Lubavitcher Rebbe. This brings to mind the idea of what we're supposed to do in Golus. Why Mashiach may not be here on some small level, maybe some small aspect, why the Beit HaMikdash is not here yet, maybe on some small aspect, on some small level. We're supposed to take whatever we can outside of the land of Israel, whatever sparks of holiness, whatever sparks of inherent goodness we could find, and use it and utilize it for Torah, for mitzvahs, for chesed. We've talked about this many times in many of our shiurim, but it's good to revive the message and reiterate the message, repeat it, especially with this idea of what the tribes here were trying to do. They were trying to find the mundane, quote-unquote, aspects of the land outside of Eretz Yisrael, and trying to lift holiness, bringing holiness to the world through using the surroundings that they have. We say a lot of times it's easy to live a spiritual existence when you're living in a spiritual bubble. It's easy to live a miraculous existence when you're living in a miraculous bubble. That was the whole idea of going from living in the Midbar to living in Eretz Yisrael. They were living a miraculous existence. They didn't have to work at anything. They didn't have to do anything too difficult. They were given food and shelter. Their clothing grew with them. They didn't have to worry about their bodily needs. And Hashem told them when they were leaving, and they saw miracles left and right. But once they came to Eretz Yisrael, once they came to Israel, they had to live a much more realistic life, a much more practical life, literally by the sweat of their brow, like talked about way back in Adam's time, that he had to toil the land, and they had to see it grow. Even in modern Israel times, Mark Twain famously explains in the late 1800s when he comes to visit how the land is so barren. But once the Jewish people came back, they had to work night and day, so difficult with their own hands, to make the land grow. And once the land grew and was green, we knew that was what Hashem wanted, because he let the land go from the desert and bloom and actually produce things. So too in our own lives, whatever we have, whatever we use, we should bring the spiritual aspects. We should bring the godliness. We take the mundane and we elevate to the spiritual. We talk about how we make kiddush, how we make challah, and we make the brachos on it. We take food, we make brachos on it, and we say benching on it, because we take something very materialistic. We take something very mundane and very ordinary, and we lift it and we make it extraordinary. We take the wine, we take the grape juice, we make a blessing on it. We have thus sanctified that aspect, that food, that drink. We take Shabbos, we make brachos on it. We take candles, a very simple thing that could actually be used for good or bad. A candle, if it touches the wrong thing, it could, God forbid, make things go in flames. But if you light the candle, you bring the flame, and it brings peace and it brings holiness to the house. They say even if the whole day Friday, the Yetzer is always trying to fight you, always trying to get you to trip up, get you to be angry, get you to fight with anyone around you, whether it be family members, kids, a spouse, or whatever. But once the flames are lit for Shabbos, there's like a sudden aura that comes through the house, and brings the idea of peacefulness, brings the idea of harmony, brings the idea of wonderful shalom bayis. You feel the effect almost in a spiritual way. We're supposed to take any sparks of holiness and bring it around us. Whatever we have, whatever technology Hashem bless us with, we live in a beautiful technological revolution times. Can you imagine? We talked about a couple of weeks ago. Can you imagine if Corona hit 100 years ago, God forbid, or 200 years ago, when there wasn't any technology, any Zoom, any Google Meet, any cell phones, any FaceTime, a complete lack of connection. It was even more isolating than it is now. But Hashem gives us the smartphones, He gives us the technology, He gives us the laptops. We're supposed to take those things, which could easily be used for bad, and take it and use it for good. Find the holiness, the sparks of holiness in the things around us, and use it and elevate it. We're supposed to find everything around us, especially when we live in exile, we live in Golis, and try to find how we could reach others, try to find what we could do with others. The idea of Zoom and Google Meet has been there for a long time, but what happened during these crazy Corona times? Hashem made it a way to put ideas in people's heads, to have these beautiful concerts to share together on the screen, these beautiful shiurim to share together on the screen, the lectures and different experiences, all these game shows and all these different events that you can have, comedy shows and mentalists and all these things you could use for good or bad. And people could use it for narishka. They could sit and they could play ridiculous games in it, or you could sit and you could listen to Torah, you could listen to songs, and you could unite and do wonderful things with it. You have a cell phone, you could use it for shiurim, you could use it for Torah, you could use it reading wonderful articles that have Judaic concepts and Judaic realms to it, and reading Jewish novels or whatever, or you could take it and use it for bad things, God forbid. We're supposed to take everything around us, elevate it, just as the Shevatim, Reuven, Gad, and then later Chatzi Sheva, Menashe, they came with a question that at first seemed to be very derogatory, seemed to be very difficult to comprehend, and seemed to be something that made Moshe very wary and Moshe very upset. But then when they explained what their concept was, they explained what they wanted to do, they explained that they wanted to take the land that doesn't have as much holiness around it and bring the holiness to it, having a sacred mission of elevating the surroundings, bringing the holiness, infusing the holiness into it. That's a wonderful thing to do, and it's a wonderful lesson for our own lives, wherever we live, especially in Golis. Even if we have the beautiful opportunity, the beautiful ability to live in Israel, it's still not the complete Israel with Mashiach and the Beit HaMikdash, which hopefully comes speedily in our days. But take our aspects, take everything around us, anything materialistic we have, use it, elevate it for Torah, use it and elevate it and bring Kedusha to it. The simple idea, the simple ways of doing it through using the mitzvahs of the Kiddush and everything like that, but even non-holy things intrinsically in and of themselves can be made to be holy. A garment that holds tzitzis in and of itself is nothing special, but you put the tzitzis on it, you elevate it, you make it into a tashmishe kedusha, tashmishe mitzvah. You have a tefillin, leather in and of itself is nothing special, but you could take it and wear it and make it a tefillin, and it becomes inherently holy. A house and a car, also a table, also can have nothing intrinsically holy to it, but you have shiurim, or you have chesed events, or you have shidduch meetings, or you do whatever you can, and you host people, and you talk Torah, you do whatever you can, and you're lifting that house, metaphorically, you're lifting that car, if you take rides, and you give rides to people, with doing hachlasas orachim through the house or through the car, you take those aspects and you're infusing the holiness into it. You're infusing wonderful elements out of it. Pirkei Avos explains, you think about the table, anyone who sits around and doesn't say Torah, it's as if they're sitting and eating from the zivchei of lahavdil, the zivchei of idols, God forbid. But anyone who sits and says Torah, sits and talks Torah, sits and talks about the parsha and sings wonderful songs with one another, you're taking the table and you're making it into a wonderful mizbeach for Hashem. Because nowadays we don't have the mizbeach. What takes the place of the mizbeach, the Gemara explains, is our table, our Shabbos table. If you sit around, not talking COVID times specifically, but in general, if you sit around and you use it as an opportunity, God forbid, for lashon hara, rechilas, motzi shemra, just talking gossip and talking politics and narshkai the whole meal, you missed an opportunity, and it's as if you're sitting at a table and sitting at the wrong reasons. But if you sit at the table and you have wonderful dvar Torah, you have wonderful conversations about the parsha and wonderful singing together and wonderful building a wonderful Shabbos together, you take that element, you take that mundanum, you lift it, and you bring wonderful sparks of holiness to it. Because everything we're given, everything we have in our life should be used for the good, should be used to infuse holiness into it. And that's what Reuven and Gad realize, and that's what we should too realize in our life. Anything we have can be used and could be infused with Torah, Kedusha, Mitzvos, and doing things for Hashem's name. And anything we could do in our life should be used to bring sanctification to Hashem as much as we can everywhere we go. This has been the Audio DT with Reb T. Join us next time as we talk a little bit on the Parsha with some practical lessons to keep. And I'm your host, Reb T.